Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. So happy because once again we have Sherry Winston with us. She is the author of Succulent Sex Craft. It's such an excellent book. And we're going to talk today about, well, in the East it's evening. Here in Seattle it's in the afternoon. Doesn't matter. You're going to hear us. We're going to talk about relationship skills or relation skills. Play nicely with others is how Sherry puts it. Don't you, Sherry? Hello.
Hello, Diana. Yeah, that's how I like to say, right? I mean, we've been trying to learn that since we were little, how to play nicely with others.
How to play nicely with others. And we're going to talk about that today with the connection tools and skills and awareness and communication skills and boundary skills. And I think a number of our listeners have heard you before because you're a frequent guest. I love having you on the show, Sherry. You're so knowledgeable, and I've recommended your book to countless people, not only on this show, but with my clients, and with great results. Succulent Sex Craft is not your only book, but it is the one that sells the most, or can you talk about that a little bit before we get into the topic
of
the day?
Actually, Women's Anatomy of Arousal is by far the bestseller. About all of the parts that women really have, including the ones that even medical professionals and sex teachers and so forth don't know about. So that's actually sort of my bread and butter book. Succulent Sex Craft is really about how to have extraordinary sex, how to become an erotic virtuoso.
Yes.
So those are my two books. Yeah.
So women buy your sexual anatomy book, and because they really want to know more, I'm saying the obvious, but they want to know more about how their bodies work and respond. And you and I, the last time you were on the show a couple of weeks ago, talked about the vestibular bulbs, something that a lot of people don't know about under the labia connected to the clitoral system. But what kind of feedback have you gotten from your readers who... your sexual anatomy book.
Well, it's for men and women. So, at least for men who partner with women, I should say.
Good. Yes, yes.
So it's really for anyone who owns the equipment or would like to help bring a great pleasure to people who own the equipment. Yeah. And I get people basically saying it's been life-changing. And mm-hmm. I get letters from people that bring tears to my eyes where
Sherry, wow.
Yeah, no, it's really life-changing. I can say for myself, when I figured out the actual anatomy, what parts I really owned, including all the ones that were left out of my textbooks, you know, I spent a lot of years getting a lot of initials after my name. So this is information that was not in the textbooks and the sex books. And for me, it radically expanded my pleasure and my sexual potential. And, of course, I shared it with partners, and they were all very grateful. everyone makes everybody happier. It's really important information to know, not just for pleasure, but for health also. So there's really multiple reasons why you would want to know what equipment you have, how it operates, how to make it happy, all sorts of reasons. But have we done a show on that? I can't even remember if we have or not. If not, we should totally do one.
Absolutely. Off the air, we'll schedule. Yes. And I need to get that book. I don't have it, but I can get it on Amazon.
Remedy,
right?
That. Yeah, you know, not only can you get it on Amazon, I'd be happy to send you a copy, but also there's an audiobook that I recorded myself that has a downloadable PDF of my illustrations of the anatomy, which I think it's essential to see. It's also available on Kindle, and, very exciting, We have got a Spanish translation that we have been working on for quite some time that should be out within a month. So I'm thrilled about that.
Yeah, you would have a potential huge market in Mexico and South America, and right? And I used to work with Maria Flaherty, who is bilingual, and her maiden name is Yepez. So she's of Mexican descent, and she would do a lot of shows in Mexico in Spanish, and worked for the Latino radio. I've forgotten what it's called. But they were just, this is going back some years, but they were just hungry for information, and especially with the Catholic Church sort of reigning down there, information is hard to come by sometimes.
And, of course, there's a large Spanish-speaking population even in the U.S., so...
Sure.
As well as, you know, countries like Spain. So, yeah, it's very exciting that we've got that translation project almost complete. So that's fun. But yeah, that's the book I usually actually tell people to start with, because I think that understanding your equipment is foundational. And if you partner with somebody, like I said, with that equipment, you want to give them all the pleasure that's possible.
Yeah,
that's where to start. And that's, I think, where we met when I was teaching that class at the conference. Yeah,
in Monterey, California.
Yeah.
And that's where we met. And that was about 2013 or 2012, right in there, don't you think?
If you say so.
It was standing room only. It was really standing room only.
Yeah.
People were very interested in this. And our listeners should know that Sherry is she's an excellent artist. And, I have the book Succulent Sexcraft in front of me. I just happened to open to your drawing of the vestibular bulbs. And it really helps with the understanding of it. And it's all tied in with the clitoral. But your drawings are really good. Tell us a little bit about your fine arts background.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I mean, I actually, through most of my teenage years, just planned on becoming an artist and moved to New York after high school and went to art school for a while and dropped out of art school because I was broke. But also I realized I didn't want to be an artist as my livelihood. And then I sort of started down the path into being a massage therapist, childbirth educator, you know, midwife assistant, blah, blah, nursing, midwife, childbirth educator, you know, the whole birth world.
Yeah.
I went into
but
that.
All of that
but
is
I always,
foundational for what you do now, very much so.
Oh, it's awesome. It's so awesome. But I never stopped making art just for my own pleasure. And so for me, I'd taken anatomy illustration courses and things like that, again, just for my, you know, electives in college or for fun. Because I love anatomy and I love art and I like illustrating things. So it was just one of the great joys of my life that I was then able to illustrate my own book. So the fact that that kind of came back around. And when I teach, I use a lot of visuals because, I've got that artist brain. So for me, visuals are really an effective way to communicate information. So it's a delight to me that artist's ability and sensibility has informed my teaching work and helped make it accessible to people. Anything that makes these ideas accessible is a positive as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. No question about it. I have to interject a little story about my paternal grandmother who was born in 1888, and she went to university and even graduate school, which is very unusual for a woman of her time. But she studied sculpture, and at that time, women weren't allowed to study sculpture. But she really was interested in anatomy, and her name is Laura Stere, L-O-R-A-S-T-E-R-E, my maiden name. And So the way she made money when she was in graduate school was to do anatomical drawings for medical books. And I remember seeing some of those drawings, and they were very detailed and very interesting. And, of course, I called on Grandma Laura for some of my science projects, like the anatomy of a chicken, I remember was one of them. Anyway,
wonderful to have that.
It is wonderful, and I'm looking to my left, and she did this sculpture of me when I was 2, holding a shell. I don't know that I went around holding shells very often, but it's very cute. It's a bronze sculpture, you know, sort of life-size. But the visual part is so important, and you're a teacher. You're a sexuality teacher, and you know people, I think, retain the information better if they can look at something. And
well, and also, people learn in different ways. And some people are visual learners, and the visual is important. Other people, it's auditory, or, you know, some people it's really the words and the thinking it through. Other people need to do something physical and kinesthetic to get the information in. So I think as a teacher, the more ways I can offer information to people, the more likely I'm going to hit on the thing that will work for them and get them to take it in. So that's always a goal of mine as a teacher, to try to teach to all those different sorts of intelligences.
Very wise, and that, of course, makes you an excellent teacher. You, in talking about connection tools and skills, you start out, you sent me an outline, which I always appreciate, awareness balance between self-awareness, partner awareness, and partner awareness you, and partner awareness us. So the self-awareness I, and before you talk about that, I just wanted to comment that sometimes the key to a better sex life might be in repairing your relationship with yourself. And that is the self-awareness I. That's part of it. And I think it's good to think about what would make you feel desirable. And, of course, desire is often the result of an emotional connection. Although I do say to my clients, my low-desire women, you know, and of course this is not new information for those of us in the field, but so often arousal precedes desire. So you have to allow yourself to be aroused and be in a good emotional place, feeling safe, and then the desire is more apt to kick in, because there is pleasure in all those non-penile touches and nibbles and kisses and licks. Indeed, sex can be very satisfying without intercourse or even without orgasm. But I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the self-awareness thing, the I thing, and knowing yourself well and what turns you on. Can you elaborate on that and more? Because it's,
self-awareness,
the I.
Yeah, well, let me start with just a larger framing. So I believe in order to have a fantastic sex with ourselves and with our partners and fantastic relationships, we need skills, and that these are learnable skills. And I think just that concept alone, that we learn how to have a good relationship with ourselves, we can learn how to have good relationships with partners, but we don't come into this world knowing those things, and we usually don't get them modeled in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So starting out with that framework is there are all these things to learn. The next piece is, I believe, our relationship with ourselves is our foundational relationship. So if I want to have a good partner relationship, if I want to have great partner sex, it starts with me learning about myself, doing what I need to do to, you know, heal myself, reframe negative messages that I've learned, heal shame, heal trauma. So that's all that relationship with ourselves that we need to work on. And the awareness of that, what's going on, what do we need to work on, where are our challenges, what do we want to learn? then the next piece of it for partner skills is how do we manage our own wants, needs, and desires and balance that out with our partner's wants, needs, and desires? How do we keep that awareness of ourselves? So you're talking about the awareness piece.
Yes.
Well as our awareness of our partner's wants and needs, and then the awareness of our relationship. It's really like a third entity, the I, the us, and the we. So that's a framing that I like to use. And just say, to give one more piece of framing before we like dive down, I think that we there are a number of different categories of skills we need to have great relationships with ourselves and our partners. We need to learn not just communications, but we need to learn about boundaries and what healthy boundaries look like and how to play with and navigate those. And so there's lots of skills we can acquire in different areas. And
as we go on with the program today, we're going to talk about boundaries more. And you call them beautiful boundaries, and I like that. So we'll talk a little bit more about boundaries as we go, because that's essential. Yeah. Or maybe you want to talk about it now. But I thought
either way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's follow your outline.
Whichever way you want to go.
Okay. So partner awareness, we're talking about that now, you and I have a phrase that actually my husband Brian came up with, and I don't think it was original, and I think we have talked about it before, but it's sync up, that a skilled lover plugs into a woman's breath and her pelvic thrusts to follow her lead, and also to listen to her vocalizations, because there may be a pattern, and then the man can match her movements to that rhythm. For instance, rather than the old in and out, the man could try rotating his hips and make it a different kind of, making for a different kind of clitoral stimulation, and sometimes the absence of thrusting helps the man. Changing it up helps the man last longer, too, so it has that benefit. So
sure.
Syncing up, I think, is important.
I would frame it that we want to sync up it at all levels and with all the whole erotic encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with intercourse, that is kind of almost its own category, but that we want to get our trance states to be entrained with each other. Arousal is a trance. It's an altered state of consciousness. So mm-hmm. one of the awarenesses, I want to be aware of my own arousal trance and my own how I can enhance that. And I want to be aware of my partner's arousal trance and how I can enhance mm-hmm. that. And so sort of first level skill is my own awareness. Second level skill is how do I balance that or alternate that with pleasuring my partner, being aware of their arousal level, and then how can we get to what I think of as sort of the highest level, which is that in-syncness you're talking about, where our trances mm-hmm. become conjoined. We're in the same trance state, and at that point it becomes less relevant who's doing what to who,
mm-hmm.
Because we have literally got our brain waves and our heart waves and our energy entrained so deeply that my turn-on becomes your turn-on when your turn-on becomes my turn-on, and everybody's just going deep into that trance state. And there are a lot of skills we can actually use to do that besides this awareness, those mental skills, but we can use our breathing. We can use sound, and I would say it goes both ways. It's mm-hmm. super helpful for male-bodied people to tune in to female-bodied people if that's who they partner with. But it doesn't even matter really what your plumbing is, because the skill is how do we connect our erotic energy to that of another person. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think there's the part of the conjoined trance, or the trance, is a feeling of merging. And the couple, some people are afraid of that because they don't have good boundaries. They have fears of merging and losing themselves. So I think the couple practicing this, they need to be fairly evolved and confident and know themselves well so that they don't have these fears come up. Well, yes, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that that actually touches sort of on that next set of skills, which are communication mm-hmm. skills.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that we use our awareness for knowing where our boundary might be, and it might be being able to communicate to a partner, these are activities I would like to do, these are activities I haven't ever done, but I might be willing to explore. Here are mm-hmm. some things that are just a hard no for me, at least right now in this encounter. And having that trust that you've communicated, your partner has received the communication, we're now moving into boundary skills a little bit, that you're going to, you'll be safe, that your partner will respect mm-hmm. your boundaries, and you'll be responsible for them, and within that place of safety, we can totally relax, let down our guard, and that is how we can get into those trances that are really shared, and it is possible. I will say that I think it is possible when we are in a very new relationship that's really exciting, when we've fallen madly in love, that mm-hmm. we can get into that conjoined trance sometimes very easily and sometimes without having that deep knowledge or trust or communication about boundaries. We just kind of get swept away.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to learn how to get there more consciously and with more choice, and when we don't have the "I've fallen madly in love and in lust with you" engine running things, that we can still mm-hmm. get there. In fact, we can get there more deeply in relationship where we've built the communication and the agreements and the understandings.
So when we get there more deeply, it feels like really real intimacy. The word intimacy, into me you see. I mean, you feel that there's emotional and physical intimacy.
Yeah, and I would even say spiritual, at least for
spiritual,
some people,
of course,
relate
yes.
to that concept. But emotional,
yeah.
spiritual, energetic. Yeah, I mean, I think it is the absolute deepest kind of intimacy we can get to when we literally get into these expanded, ecstatic states with a partner. And also, that, you know, this is possible to create with somebody, whether it's a new relationship or an old relationship, we can do the things that will help us get to that place or get farther, deeper, or more into that place than perhaps we've even knew it was possible to go to, which is sort of, you know, where I'd like to try to, how far can we go? How deep can we go?
Yes. How far can we go?
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that communication when you're with your partner, and I like it that you say you could even do that in the beginning of a relationship, but if you want to be able to keep it up, you need to mm-hmm. practice a little more consciously the skills that you're suggesting, and that you need to be fully transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot. I think I know from the couples counseling that I do. If you want to have trust, you must be willing to share everything, and
mm-hmm.
and especially those things that you don't want to share. Because I think it takes courage to fully love, to fully open your heart, and let your partner in when you don't know if he or she will like what she finds or he finds. I think part of the courage is allowing the person to love you completely, your darkness as well as your light. So I say, drop the mask. If you feel like you need to wear a mask around your partner, then and show up all perfect all the time, you'll never experience the full dimension of what love can be. I'm sure you agree.
Because you're not going to be, if you're hiding part of yourself, your partner says, I love you, and inside you just go, yeah, well, if you really knew me, if you knew about those deep, ugly parts of me that I haven't shown you, then you wouldn't love me. And once we have the courage, and courage is the word, once we have the courage to really show up fully, including our wounds and our scars and the parts of us that we're not as thrilled with or proud of and our struggles, when we can really show up fully with all of that and still be accepted and still be loved, then we can really receive love, fully receive love.
Yes, and that's such a good point.
We can't.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we can take it in, because I think there's a part of it that if the person, usually this is unconscious, but if the person feels unworthy, then they're not as likely to be able to really receive real love. And that sometimes takes individual therapy work. If you come out of a family where there's, you know, where the mother was critical and alcoholic and the father the same, and so a lot of messages that translate to the person as an adult to being fearful and not feeling worthy and having trouble staying in the present and taking it all in and enjoying the pleasure.
That's the great opportunity and challenge of long-term relationship. Is we have the opportunity to heal those things. Sometimes it also includes one-on-one work with a good therapist or, you know, different kinds of personal growth work of our own things. But we also have that opportunity with a partner to heal and grow and learn and help each other. And I think that, again, that's one of the great gifts of long-term relationship, but you're absolutely right. It requires a deep commitment to being honest, to telling the truth, to being transparent, to saying what's hard. Ideally, we're going to learn how to do that in the best possible way. How can I say hard things in the kindest, most loving way so that my partner has the best chance of hearing it, right?
Yep.
So that's the communication skills that we need. And then we have the opportunity to grow in amazing ways.
And another little piece of this probably has to do with the mirror neurons in our brains, that when we're with somebody a long time, we reflect back some of them. And so we want to be with a person who can help us grow and vice versa, the personal growth.
Yeah.
Don't you believe in mirror neurons?
Oh, mirror neurons are why we can get into that conjoined trance, why we can get to a point where if I'm doing something that pleasures my partner, it's turning me on because of mirror neurons. Yeah, I'm a fan of mirror neurons. And
yay for mirror neurons.
Yay for mirror neurons. And it's also, you know, why... we have this capacity. I mean, I think I've got amazing capacity to give myself pleasure, but there are places I can get to with a partner that I couldn't get to by myself. And I think because with myself, I'm not turning on the mirror neurons, right? I mean, it's about me, and that's wonderful, and I can focus on me, and it can be fantastic. And at the same time, when with a partner and we really get to those expanded erotic states, there's this other dimension that is miraculous. That's the word that comes to mind, miraculous.
I like that word. Miraculous.
That's what it feels like, right?
Yeah.
It feels like it's miraculous.
And it can take you to Wonderland. I love the idea of Wonderland. And those of us who have...
And,
Yeah.
I was just going to say,
we're very lucky if we have a part... What?
We all have the potential, yes.
Yeah.
We do. Yeah. And it's learnable. We can learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And,
but, you know, our culture tells us that we should just fall madly in love and live happily ever after, and there's no work involved, and then, of course, that we don't live happily ever after unless we're working on it, you know, unless we're learning and growing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have this cultural myth that relationships somehow is going to be just this magical experience that doesn't require any energy or effort. But it does.
Live happily ever after.
Yeah, that myth.
that myth. You know, it does help to be a more mature person with life experience. I say that in the face of some of the physical ailments I've been having lately as a mature person. But, you know, it also helps, of course, to stay positive and to have a partner who loves and supports you. So we're very fortunate if we have that, and we want to cultivate it and keep it and show appreciation, because I think when you speak up about appreciation, it creates good feelings, it draws us closer, and all of those things. Maybe this is segueing into more of the communication area.
Well, what you're talking about now, I would call positivity. And this is something that my partner and I have worked on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
As I will say, I did not come from an upbringing that where I was bathed in positivity.
You did not, yeah. So you had a little more work to do. Yeah.
Well, it's my natural way of communicating was more critical and negative, because that was my environment, and you don't even know you're doing it until your partner's going, ow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be willing to kind of go like, oh, I don't want to be like my mother. I don't want to be critical and judgmental and bitchy, and you know, and then you have to really, it's a lot of work to get down there and change these habits of communication. And I'll just throw in sometimes we play what we call playpen games, which are learning games. And it can be something where you take, 5 minutes or an hour or all day, whatever it is, you set a time and then you make the game. And one of our games is a positivity game, where we just try and slather the other person with positive appreciation. Usually we'll try and play it for a day. We totally forget, and then we have to remind each other. But, you know, for every single thing that they do, they empty the dishwasher, and we're like, thank you so much. I just really appreciate that you've taken care of that. And, they're leaving the room, and they say, well, I'll be back in a minute. And you're just like, well, thank you for letting me know that. That just really helps me, you know, plan what I'm going to do next, whatever. And and to try and develop the skills of positivity. And, and like I said, for me, not easy. That was always one of my life challenges because of my upbringing. So,
yeah, and so probably in terms of... I'm sorry, what?
Just there's the opportunity, you know.
The opportunity,
In relationship, yeah. Yeah.
And if we think about ego states, so you've got the parent, the adult, and the child ego state, many people have a very well-developed critical parent ego state, and that's, from what I've read, that's the hardest one to get rid of, and some people will... take drugs or drink alcohol in order to put the critical parent to sleep, so the child ego state, the child can come out to play. It's a really tough one if you've had a parent modeling negativity and being critical and being judgmental. it gets integrated into the child, and it's a shame, and it interferes with good attachment. A lot of these folks have anxious attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it interferes with everything, and because that negative, critical, judgmental voice that can go on, I can lay that on myself as easily as I could lay it on a partner or a coworker, or especially, you know, as a boss, I can lay that on an employee. And gosh, I don't want to be doing that. That's not how I want to be interacting. So it's in my intimate relationship where I'm going to have the most opportunity to see that, recognize it, and in a loving, self-healing way, start to reprogram that voice. And it's going to be as important for how I talk to myself, right? Part of that journey has been recognizing how mean I can be to myself, right?
Yeah, that is very destructive. It's, I get the image of the person banging their forehead against a wall, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't deserve good stuff. I'm worthless, and so I'm going to be really mean to myself and sometimes sabotage a relationship in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are all kinds of ways that relationship offers us healing, growing opportunities if mm-hmm. we look at it that way. If instead of sitting there going, God, my partner is such a baby, you know, I mean, he gets so hurt so easily, you know, or we can go, oh, I'm being hurtful.
Uh-huh.
How could I be that would, how can I change that? And again, these are the learning, communication, relationship, and boundary skills that we have the opportunity to heal in ourselves and with our partners. And, or not. I mean, if we don't have to heal it, but chances are we're not going to either have the kind of partner we want, or any partner, or we're not going to have the kind of friendships, work environment, you know, relations with our kids. I mean, this affects every relationship we have. So, again.
Absolutely. And, good communication involves really speaking up. You know, some people believe if you really loved me, you should know. You should know what I want every moment, and that's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. Good communication is necessary, and I think it's even necessary in the light of day when you can see your partner's face and the subtle reactions. You know?
I think, absolutely. I think that it's certainly one of the keys
mm-hmm.
to a successful, happy relationship. And I think that there's lots of tools out there to help people. I'll say nonviolent communication, NVC, which is a form of compassionate communication that's based on empathy and understanding the stories that we create and understanding our feelings and our need systems. And it's a beautiful way of reprogramming yourself to communicate in a way that's positive and loving, and it's useful in every relationship. That work has been, I would say, the most significant thing that I've done that has really helped me not have that critical, judgmental voice internally and externally. Yeah.
And is NVP, nonviolent communication,
NVC,
is that
the nonviolent NVC?
Yeah.
NVC, yeah.
Mm-hmm. C, there.
Yeah.
Nonviolent communication.
Yeah.
Is that actually a book? Or just a
book? It started out as a book, yeah. Marshall Rosenberg wrote a book, and then it developed into programs. You can find workshops, and there's online things, and so it's I found reading was useful for me. I did various workshops over the years. The thing that was the most deep and foundationally healing and changing was doing some intensives. My partner and I did several week-long intensives, and that was such a gift. So much awareness and skill building and realizations about, for example, the stories we tell ourselves, and then that we trigger ourselves. That's a good one. So instead of going, oh, my partner triggered me, my partner did something that hurt me, and I'm mad at them, instead it's possible for us now to go like, oh, this is what happened, objective reality, and then I triggered myself. And I did that, and then being empathetic with yourself, I understand why I did that. This is what I'm feeling. My feelings are valid. These were the needs that were underneath, and here's what I can do about it. It's really, really powerful stuff. So
we have in this area, John and Julie Gottman do intensive with couples. They do long weekends too. And actually Brian and I were comped about 4 years ago to attend a weekend session, and that was very nice of them, because I really think their work is just wonderful, in 40 years of research and so on. But then
I read their books, and I think they're wonderful.
The way that John Gottman can predict divorce is amazing. You know, he has a master's in mathematics from MIT, in addition to all of his psychological. He's a psychologist, but he has this formula where, and you probably are familiar with it, but where if you say something negative or do something really negative, then you have to replace it with about four positives. And he taped his couples over a period of many, many years in the so-called love lab, and they were videotaped. They were hooked up with monitors to see about their blood. Their urine was examined so that when they were in conflict, he could see the physiological changes. And so this is pretty in-depth work. And I've had a number of clients who have really benefited from a long weekend or even a longer time than that. So the intensive. You can go deeper, don't you think, with the intensive?
Yeah, and, you know, there are some wonderful relationship teachers out there whose work is profound. I mean, the Gottmans, I think, the Harville Hendricks work about the imago, you know, about why we're attracted to our partners and where the potential for healing is fantastic. And the MVC stuff. These are all amazing tools for helping us understand ourselves, helping us understand our partners, helping us understand why we're attracted to who we're attracted to, and because we're going to get into the stuff with somebody. If we're in significant relationship, it's going to come up. We're not going to live happily ever after unless we develop skills. This is where the whole thing we're talking about, which are relation skills, and I would have to say that most of the stuff I've learned and worked with and practiced over all these years has really come from these many different people who have such wisdom. But got to do the work. Got to be willing to do the work.
Got to do the work. And back in 2013, there was an article by Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen Hunt. Are you familiar with her name? So
yes, she partnered with him in most of his work.
Yes. So they were married for 30 years, but then 15 years ago, they're saying in at 2013, they were on the verge of filing a divorce. Here they're two therapists, but, you know, we're all vulnerable, right? So a fellow marriage counselor told them that they were the worst couple he'd ever encountered. He called them the couple from hell. Imagine.
Right.
And so they resolved to remove negativity from their own relationship and to eliminate negativity patterns. And so they, couples can change their patterns and turn their relationships into safe places where negativity is replaced by pleasure and maybe even a more lighthearted communication. So what they did was to resolve, they had a contract with each other, with your partner to go 30 days without negativity in the relationship. That's hard. I've suggested this to some of my clients. That's hard, but it can be transforming if you do it. And
I got a lot of that positivity stuff from them, having done workshops with them more recently after having done work with them 20 years ago, and then going around again and doing work with them after they revised their work to include that positivity piece. And that was has been very, very useful for us. Like I said, I think I really had not just a negativity, but a framework that it was okay to be negative.
Witnessed growing up.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So their work, when they, shifted it and started saying what you really need to do, all this positivity, it was kind of like, oh, I do. Mm-hmm. I really do. Shit.
They also suggest replacing judgment with curiosity.
That's beautiful.
Rather than become negative when your partner says or does something you disagree with, become curious. Well, why did he say or do this thing? Or why did she do this? Why did she feel this way? And in my experience, usually the partner is not intending to frustrate you. He's just being himself. So being curious rather than judgmental about behavior often offers the opportunity. You use the word opportunity, and so do I, opportunity to know your partner better and yourself in the process. Mm-hmm. That's the nice thing about committed long-term relationships.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then you have the co-learning opportunity. Then you can go, and again, I'm doing this in kind of an MVC way, but to be able to go, I noticed this happened, and I'm curious, I'm wondering, what was going on in you or for you. You can ask yourself what you think might have been going on for them. Mm-hmm. Then you're just going to still be in your stories. But to be able to ask your partner, not in any kind of a, what the heck is wrong with you way, but more of a, I'm really curious that, when that happened, what was going on for you? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? And your partner can say, I was actually feeling anxious about something, or I was a little angry about something, and then you've got the real thing to talk about and communicate with. And you can say something like, when that happens, it would work better for me if you framed it this way. It's just ongoing learning opportunity. That's how I see relationship and developing our skills, all of those skills, how to give and receive positivity, how to be honest, how to practice courage, and how to say hard things in kind ways.
That's a very important one. All that you said is important, but this is really how to say hard things in kind ways.
Yeah. because I think for me, I'm a very forthright person. So I would just say something, and my partner might be devastated by it. And I'm like, well, I'm being honest. That's the only important thing. But I wasn't thinking about, is this a good time? What's a gentle way to say it? What's an understanding way to say it? What kind of response or reaction might I get? And can I frame it in such a way that that will mitigate it or make it easier to hear? And, you know, even for things like saying no, because boundaries are, we didn't really talk too much about, but, you know, if my partner asks me something and I am clear that the answer is no, it used to be I would just be like, no, no. And he would hate that. I mean, it just, he did not respond well to hearing that. But now I know that I can say, well, sweetie, I get why you would want that. I totally understand you wanting that. And I even wish I could give that to you. It's not going to work for me right now. But is there something else that I could do now that would meet that need? Or is there some other way we can meet the need? Or maybe we can do something later. You know, now we have a conversation about it. And I haven't said no. I'm still telling the truth, but I'm saying it in a gentle way, and I'm saying it with a framing of love and connection, and that's a whole different ballgame. He can hear that, no problem. And then we can work towards what could be a yes. What could I say yes to?
I like that a lot. So and interwoven with all of that is the curiosity piece, the replacing the judgment with curiosity that... you know, I think ultimately we need to see our partners for themselves and with their own private world of personal meaning, with their own ideas and dreams, and they're not an extension of ourselves. Sometimes I think there's some magical thinking, oh, you know, that we're joined at the hip, beating as one, and all of that.
Everybody is just like us. We think everybody is just like us, and then when they're not, we're so annoyed at them.
I know.
Why aren't you doing what I would do? Why aren't you saying what I would say? They never do.
Exactly. And, you know, I'll give an example. So somebody might, before they have this awareness, they might say, you liked that awful movie? Instead of saying it that way, tell me what you liked about that movie. I want to know what you think. So, because genuine curiosity is very sexy, it leads to vulnerable sharing and deepens connection.
Yes, and another one of those factors that predicts relationship success in the sense of being happy together is interest, being genuinely interested in the other person.
Oh, yes.
And you'll see that.
Yes.
You know, like if you're at a restaurant, you look around at couples, you'll see a couple where they seem really interested in each other, and usually that means that they're new.
Yeah.
You'll see some couple that have been together forever, and they're just so bored. They're just not even looking at each other or communicating or something. There's nothing going on between them. They just don't seem interested. And in fact, it's one of the things that often draws people to have affairs.
Yeah.
There's this new person, and they're so interested in me.
Uh-huh.
And we long for that, right? So that being interested, it's another important building block of long-term relationship. What'd you do today? You know, but, you know, what happened today? What was great? What didn't work for you? What was making you sad? What upset you? What did you learn? That's part of what keeps relationships juicy, being genuinely interested. And every misunderstanding or confusion or breakdown or upset is an opportunity for that curiosity. So, again,
an opportunity for that curiosity. We need to being interested in each other. It's also very it's very positive in that if you feel like your partner is really interested in you, then you're more likely to feel close to them. I want to know all that I can know about you, and I never want to stop growing together. you know, that stagnant pond breeds malaria, and the flowing stream is always fresh and cool. So atrophy is the natural process when you. Oh, I'm experiencing this a little bit because I am having some leg muscle problems, and so when you stop working the muscle, it's just as if you stop working your relationship. So I think it's important to never stop growing together and having that awareness, which you and I both are giving some good suggestions for people that really want to grow in this area. So in the time that we have left, which isn't much, did you want to just get, you've already given an overview of boundaries, because we've talked about self-awareness, know yourself, and how that'll help, and authentic communication, say what you really mean. Is there more that you'd like to say about maybe the sacred boundaries? Because in the past you've talked about sacred boundaries. That's that spiritual piece.
Well, in the minute or two I have left.
Yeah, and we do have to stop about 2 or 3 minutes before the top of the hour. But
I know, I know.
Maybe we can carry this over.
Every time it happens.
I take that back. Why don't you say what kind of an overview as you see it from this program? And then, of course, you know I always do the write-up and tell people to go. Well, listen to the archived version, which should be up by tomorrow morning. So do you want to just do kind of the takeaways that you'd like the listeners to? Yeah, good.
Yeah, takeaways. Well, I think it starts with sweeping out those myths that we've been given about our partners are psychic. If they loved us, they would know. That we're just going to live happily ever after without any work. And look at the journey of relationship as being full of challenges that could be opportunities for learning and growing together. And that there are wonderful teachers and tools out there, and avail yourselves of them. Things like, you know, Imago therapy for the Hendrix, the Gottman's work, the nonviolent communication. There's just fantastic tools out there that can help us just be better, happier human beings with all our relationships and connections, not just our intimate partners, and help us be happier, healthier people. And relationship does, I think, offer an amazing, amazing set of opportunities. So we have to reframe and look at that way instead of going, oh, this person is driving me crazy, and go, here's an interesting opportunity.
Opportunity. You use the word a lot, and I like it. Thank you, Sherry, for another great program.
Thank you, Diana.
And we'll the next time you're on, which will be soon, we'll talk about your anatomy book. Goodbye, everybody.
Awesome.
Thank you.